This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Alan Dershowitz sucks. I'm not going to talk about that. I just needed to say it. The guy sucks. I went to the law school where he taught. He's now emeritus. And that dude, I don't know what happened to him. All right, I'm moving on. Starting again. I'm thinking right now of Jacob Riis. Jacob Riis, who became a little more famous because of Greg Popovich. But Jacob Riis, who was a Danish immigrant, who knew what it was to be poor. He was a journalist and activist in the progressive era. And he took on his battle with the slums. And he took photograph after photograph after photograph after photograph of tenements and people living in squalid conditions. He gave lecture after lecture after lecture with his pictures until finally he could write a magazine article, until finally he could write his life's defining work, How the Other Half Lives, taking the title from Francois Rabelais, One Half of the World Does Not Know How the Other Half Lives. And Jacob Riis said the following thing and offered to history the following quote. When nothing seems to help, I go look at a stonecutter hammering away at his rock, perhaps 100 times without as much as a crack showing in it. Yet at the 101st blow, it will split in two, and I will know it was not that blow that did it, but all that had gone before. To me, when I look at the Supreme Court appointment that is going to happen tonight, and we're going to talk about it in this hour, I think not only of this moment, but also of this era, of not only what will happen over the next 24 hours, over the next 24 days, but also what will happen over the next 24 years, and that how we have to gird ourselves for that long pursuit, for that long game, for that stone cutting, for that photograph after photograph after photograph, for that presentation after presentation, that lecture after lecture, that magazine article, that tweet, that conversation with a family member or a friend. Because we can no longer rest upon the laurels that were grown by the civil rights movement or the anti-war movement or the progressive movement or the New Deal. We have to build new movements. And so why open not only with the Supreme Court this morning, but with the breastfeeding story, because it lays so bare what happens when there is a government based on greed. And I come from my own place of privilege when I analyze it. And thank you to the wonders of our listening and viewing community. They brought up another point that I was just going to say, but I got to give our listeners and viewers the credit for it. That blocking Ecuador's move to have international embracing of promoting breastfeeding and health of mother's milk in nations across the world, that the United States government, that the Trump government, that this government of greed blocking that is an ancestor, if you will, is a continuation of an exercise of colonialism, is understanding as our relationship with other nations, not a relationship of nurture, not even not a relationship of peer, not even a relationship of humanity, but a relationship of plunder, a relationship of natural resource extraction for the financial benefit of someone who does not live there. And I say this as someone who has benefited from, in mostly in ways that I am not aware, because I'd probably rather not be aware as I don my clothes and drive my car and live in my house. But I say this as someone who has benefited from that colonialism. And I want to appreciate and say thank you for that reminder. And as we think about what stone are we cutting? What rock are we hammering? What thing are we doing day after day after day so that finally we might be able to mix metaphors and bend an arc of history towards justice? What is that thing that we are working towards? We have on the line waiting someone who is a stonecutter herself. Right now, she is working on the Supreme Court, and we are going to talk to her about that and ask some of your questions and some of mine. Her name is Anisha Singh. She is a senior organizing director for Generation Progress, the youth engagement arm for CAP, the Center of American Progress. Anisha Singh, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Is there, Anisha, I don't want to say is there hope, because I think there is long-term hope. Do you think there is a meaningful probability that Donald Trump's Supreme Court justice nominee will not be confirmed. And if you think there's a meaningful probability, what is the pathway?
Yes, there definitely is. And I think it's so important for everyone listening in to realize that this is still something we can fight. There are two things that are on the chopping block here if Trump's nominee is confirmed. We know this. Roe will be overturned. We know the ACA will also be dismantled in the courts. And I think remembering these two things and reminding senators of these two things will help us succeed. We have two what people call moderate Republicans, but basically individuals on the Republican side who are pro-choice. We have Collins and Murkowski who are wavering here. And we need to remind them of how important the Roe decision is to everyday people, but also that we cannot trust anything that this nominee says, anything on this nominee's record, or anything Trump is saying, because he made it so clear on the campaign trail that he was going to choose individuals for this seat that were going to pass his litmus test, that they would overturn Roe. So it's important for all of us to be galvanizing against around these two senators, because if we have their vote, we could block this. We also need to make sure our own Democrats in the Senate are holding their ground. There are some who live in red states that are wavering right now. We need to remind them that their constituents care about the ACA. We saw how the people galvanized around the ACA when it was going to be dismantled once before last year, and we need to be having that same energy here as well. It's so important for our movement and for our base to galvanize around this just as hard as they did then, as if their lives are on the line, because this is about our lives. This is about the next 40, 50 years. This is about, you know, whether or not we want Trump to have a say in what's happening to us decades from now.
I hugely appreciate that and appreciate its strategic helpfulness. That because what I was thinking about this morning, and I hadn't connected the dots as well as you have, what I was thinking about this morning is like, okay, well, all of the work that you do to get Murkowski and Collins to say Roe is going away might make it harder for Donnelly and Manchin, Donnelly and Indiana, yes, Manchin in West Virginia, yes, who are you know, anti-abortion Democrats, to say to hop on that bus. But you're saying something different. You're saying that that healthcare is also on the line, and people in West Virginia and Indiana get sick too. And help connect those dots. Is it because Kennedy was the deciding fifth vote on upholding the ACA?
It's mostly because this nominee, whoever it is, we know are going to be much more right than Kennedy. And that's saying something, because Kennedy himself was very much voting with the conservative side for most things. I mean, he was really good on marriage equality and a few things here and there. But because of the way that he did add to the debate that was also taking place within the justices, we know that whoever this replacement will be that is being presented before us tonight is going to be completely to the right of that, and was going to change that entire dynamic. And we're going to have less of thoughtfulness about what the people need and more about what corporations want to be the center of the debate that happens between these justices when they're deciding these cases. So whether or not you agree with where you stand on abortion, healthcare is something that everyone cares about. And even though we didn't have the majority last year either, we were still able to stop what the Republicans were trying to do, because, like you said, everyone can understand how healthcare impacts them, and everyone was showing up at town halls. And we just have to have that same kind of passion when people are calling their senators and stopping by their offices. One thing I will say is senators always say this, especially Democratic senators, that they get hundreds of calls from the conservative side on where they stand on different nominees that are going to be nominated or confirmed for our judiciary. But they only get a handful from the progressive side, and that's because we've always been terrible at galvanizing around the courts. So when they do get calls from our side, they are, you know, taken aback, and they're paying attention, and they're listening in on what we need and what we want. So it's so important that everyone really takes this moment. This is the week to be calling your senator's office.
I appreciate that. I want to respond to it, and I want permission to ask a favor. The reason I appreciate it is I was thinking, even as I was communicating on air this morning, that, well, the jig looks up. It looks like we're going to lose this one. And so, okay, well, let's live to fight another day. But something else, as I was listening to you, occurred to me, right? You know, basically just parroting what you said, and maybe hopefully helping to amplify it, is that you are helping people, and we need to help people get in the practice of caring about the courts. That there is a chance that whatever percentage you said that there is a chance that every Democrat will hold together, and that Murkowski and Collins would hold until the next election, and even though that would motivate the Christian right to vote in the coming election, that there seems to probably some long-term strategic value in progressives recognizing how important the courts are and not thinking, oh, that's just something that's going to happen that other people are going to work on, but that we need to organize around. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, I think we've tried to have that messaging stick with the American people before, when there was the last Supreme Court vacancy that was supposed to be Merrick Garland's, and then there was obstruction by Mitch McConnell and his GOP Senate. Then we saw with Gorsuch, we tried to get, the progressive side to care as much. And I think it was difficult because with our party, it's always, there's so many attacks happening every single day.
Yep.
And we're feeling that attack every single day that it's sometimes hard to see that long term. And we're being attacked on so many different issues. So even capacity wise, it's hard. But I think what's happened in the last 2 years that Trump has been in office is that people are seeing how the courts have been saving us. Right. He has put out executive order after executive order that are damaging. And then, we see the lower court judge blocks a travel ban.
Yep.
The lower court judge blocks transgender ban. Just 2 weeks ago, lower court judge tells this administration, stop separating families and you have 2 weeks to reunite them.
Yeah. And humanities majors still read about the Warren Court and think of the Supreme Court as a thing that sometimes is ahead of justice, is fighting against oppression, even majoritarian power isn't.
Right. And so we're seeing this on the lower courts. And yet, I don't know if people know this, there are hundreds of vacancies that Trump got on the lower courts, too, that he has been filling with these vile, vile nominees. And they've been confirmed because, again, Mitch McConnell Senate. So we've been seeing that.
Plug a website sides. Before break, Anisha.
OK.
Plug your website.
Oh, denprogress.org.
Hang with us for a minute. Anisha Singh, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This is the Tease. Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith, Supreme Court appointment tonight. But the news didn't happen tonight. The news has been happening for years. Anisha, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
So here's, I did intend to cut you off, but hopefully for our mutual benefit. If I cut you off and you didn't finish your point, please do.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that.
Here's the favor I wanted to ask, and then we can talk about whatever you want. But here's my favor: when I hear small L liberal, and by that I don't mean left, I don't mean progressive, I don't mean forward or rise, I don't mean anti-oppression. I just mean people who think of themselves as involved in the pursuit of decision based on reasoning. I've heard Vox say it. I've heard the New York Times say it. That conservatives will talk about how the original sin was the blockage of Robert Bork from the court. My favor is that you, from your august perch and your myriad friends, call them on that prevarication, call them on that misstatement, that mistruth, that there is a previous original sin that motivated them. I don't think that the right wing got motivated because of Bork. I think they got motivated before that. And if you challenge them, they say, oh, you're right. They got really motivated around Roe versus Wade. And say, oh, yeah, Roe versus Wade, there's big backlash to that. And I say, no, you got to go earlier. I think this began, and by the way, I got a shout out to the author McLean of Democracy in Chains, that the original sin, which I think you and I would agree is the original virtue, was Brown versus Board of Education. And Brown versus Board of Education, the Warren Court, showed patriarchal racist power, that the courts could be a tool to overcome majoritarian tyranny. And that is when the movement was built and began to be funded and the rhetorical architecture crafted to start moving in the direction of the federal society and the courts we are seeing now. My favor is that we try to deconstruct this idea that, oh, Bork started it, or even that Roe started it, because what I am, and you can disagree with me, but my hypothesis at this moment is that racism started it, and sexism too, to be sure, but racism started it well before Roe in the 50s with Brown versus Board of Education. Where am I wrong, or if I'm right, would you do me my favor?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's been almost 50 years that the conservatives have been sitting and looking at what the courts can do for them and what they can't, what, you know, and what happens if they don't have the courts on their side. They have been really good at monitoring that for decades, and our side has just not been as good. I think we're starting to do that now, but we're playing catch up. And we saw that throughout the decades. We're seeing how they've had lobbyists, millions of dollars invested to make sure that they are having judges in the courts that are fighting for them. We've seen, you know, Heritage Foundation, Federalist Society, Judicial Crisis Network, all of these very extreme right groups investing millions of dollars to churn out judges for our lower courts and our Supreme Court that are going to follow and care for corporate interests and not the people. And so we've seen decades of this. So now we're at a place where when Obama was president and we had control over the presidency and they had control over the Senate, they showed their power and they've definitely made our third branch of government as partisan as it has ever been before. A branch of government that was meant to be bipartisan because it was supposed to work with both parties has now become so partisan because the Republican Party have taken important rules and taken them and just dismantled them completely.
Aneesha Singh, thank you so much for joining us. Hugely appreciate your work. Can Democrats stop it with a quorum call is a question we got from one of our smart listeners. We've got to go to break. We'll be back in just a moment. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith sitting in. We are sitting with, well, not immediately next to, but at the same time as Aneesha Singh, Center for American Progress, working on the courts, making it plain that this has been something that's been going on for 50 years, that the right-wing movement has been more organized and disciplined around the courts than pro-democracy forces or anti-oppression forces have. And also have made the case, in case you missed that portion of the discussion, that all it takes is keeping together 50 votes, keeping together all the Democrats and then getting Lisa Murkowski or Susan Collins, to vote no, and that could be good to at least start getting in the habit of engaging with justices, because not only is Roe at stake, but so is the ACA. Was that a fair summary of our discussions up to now?
Absolutely, it's so important that everyone realizes we can still win this fight.
Here is a question we got. We are blessed by having a large number of virtuous, smart, and insightful listeners. And I say that not merely to pander, maybe mildly to pander, but not merely to pander. But it makes this job more fun and better because they come up with important stuff. And here's one of the, I think it was Lisa that asked this question. What about doing the thing that was done in the Midwest to deny a quorum with every Democrat leaving? My own skepticism question maybe was that, well, what about just a quorum call with federal marshals going out to arrest him and put him in the building? And does that make Democrats look worse? What information can you offer about both the rules and strategy about the quorum call? And then we'll go to break. So say anything you want after that.
Well, I think that it's definitely an option that we have, but it's not a long-term strategy, right? We can, the Democrats could use the threat of quorum breaking to get a promise from McConnell that they would take no action until after the election. There are a few different things that have been floated around, but that still doesn't really get to the heart of the problem, which is these nominees have all been vetted already to be terrible. So if not one nominee, then it's another, and
yeah.
We just have to have that. The narrative needs to be that this is a president that is currently under investigation by our FBI, and he is the same guy who expects loyalty. We know this from everybody who works for him, and this is going to be no different with this justice, and we need to make sure that we don't have someone who is going to then, when presented with a question in front of their court, taking the president's side if it has to do with this investigation. We also need to make sure that it's not someone who is just going to say something vague like, oh, I'm going to follow precedent on Roe. We know that that's not true. We know Gorsuch himself was a classic example where Collins and Murkowski kind of bent for Gorsuch, even though he gave that vague answer, and we also know he would vote against Roe.
Yeah.
Same thing with healthcare. Same thing with
federal society's both been vetting and schooling them. They're saying follow the right wing line and don't make it so obvious during your confirmation hearing.
Absolutely.
And they were doing it since I was in law school. And one of my he was at Yale when I was in the Boston area, when I was at Harvard. But he was a Federal Society guy, and now he's been appointed to the Ninth Circuit. I don't know if he's going to get confirmed. So here's my other thing. Just before we wrap, my other favor. The court was already packed. When Vox or others are writing about it, they should not say that court expansion is court packing. It's court expansion. If there were a move to add 2 seats, Supreme Court, or 3 and make it 12 like a jury, that would not be packing. Mitch McConnell has packed this court. The Federalist Society has packed this court. They've been packing it for a long time. Say your website one more time, and we really appreciate your work.
JenProgress.org. Thank you so much for having me.
Be well. This is the Tom Hartman Show. We'll be back. Talk to the Supreme Court, Mother's Milk, democracy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
This is the Tom Hartman Show, and we are honored to be a part of it and to have you part of it. I'm Jeff. We'll be back. How we doing, folks? I'm Jefferson Smith. This is the Tom Hartman Show. We've been talking mother's milk. We've been talking about the government greed. We've been talking about the Supreme Court, and we've been talking about your calls. Peter, listening on Sirius, been waiting patiently, wanting to talk about Mitch McConnell. Peter, hello.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can indeed.
Okay, sir. I'm really curious. Please help me, because if I'm missing something here, I would like your feedback. In light of the craven zealotry on behalf of McConnell and so many of the new people in this new cult, I should think that certain strategies on behalf of progressives and Democrats, no matter how remote or minimal power they might carry with them, so much needs to be considered. And the point I'm trying to make is that I don't understand why, since McConnell betray his own rule to wait until the election take a vote. And the issue came up at one point, but it seems to have been dropped by the entire media, including programs like yours. It's like nobody talks about protesting aggressively against his betraying and the outrageous hypocrisy involved in it. Why is nobody talking about using that as one of the strategies?
And so I heard you say 2 things. I heard you say, why aren't people talking enough about the fact that McConnell said that we shouldn't make a Supreme Court appointment during election year? And then second, in order to highlight that point, why aren't people out in the streets protesting in general or protesting Mitch McConnell in specific? Did I hear you right?
Yeah, I mean, okay. Especially about its hypocrisy, I would think that people would be outraged by that.
Yeah. So hypocrisy abounds, and I think that the cup runneth over. We have talked this afternoon for the people on the East Coast. I think where you are, we have talked about the violation of principle. In fact, it was one of the ways we opened the show. And part of my case is because I don't think it was ever about the principle. I think it is important to highlight that. I don't think that's an excuse not to talk about it. I think what it does is belie what's actually going on, which has never been, for Mitch McConnell, a discussion of principle. It has been a discussion of power. It has been an exercise in power. And that highlighting that fact to strip back the veneer so that people better understand when power is being wielded for the benefit of people or merely for the benefit of power itself, I agree with you, that's important. In terms of additional protests in the country, I mean, I am hoping that everybody is spending a little bit of time every month protesting something that they care about. Protesting isn't enough. I used to be, and I will say, and I say this with some shame, I used to be almost against it. I used to think, no, what we need to do is more voter turnout. What we need to do is more canvassing, door-to-door knocking. It's the best way of getting out the vote. It's the best way of persuading people who aren't necessarily watching the same TV shows, the same radio, the same Twitter feeds. And I still believe that. But I now do think that there is an important, an obviously and deeply important role for championing less. And something I like about what you said is that, to me, one of the very best purposes of a protest is to highlight a message, is to get that single sentence, is to get that single sentence made clear to more people. And that single sentence of this was just a fib from the beginning, the idea that there was any principle here about Supreme Court justices when it comes to Mitch McConnell and the current government of greed, as I've been saying today, was never the real thing. And I think that could make some sense. Sonia on Free Speech TV also wants to talk about Mitch McConnell. Sonia, go ahead.
Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes. This is Sonia.
Hey, Sonia.
And at your opening, you said, what is the thing that you just thought would never happen?
Yeah.
Well, what you and the previous caller were just talking about is my comment that how we let Mitch McConnell get away from stealing the pick that President Barack Obama should have made.
Yeah.
I that's the most egregious thing that I can think of that has occurred. You and the woman commentator were talking about the fact that Democrats don't seem to think about the consequences of the judiciary. Well, as you said, it's gone back 50 years, and we're not talking, get stuck up on Roe v. Wade. But then we have, like you say, the school decision, the civil rights decision, the union decision, the LGBT decision that's just come down. There are so many issues that these courts.
Yeah, and people, I think, will be noticing it now, and for too many of them, too late to do something about Neil Gorsuch or Merrick Garland, but not necessarily too late. Anisha Singh's point was not necessarily too late to do something about this very appointment, and certainly not too late to do something about the arc of history. And we need to be paying attention more to it. And I see it, Sonia, also through a historical lens, maybe largely through a historical lens, that you have that. If we see some of the most important court decisions that ever happened, the Dred Scott decision, a decision of sin and evil, the Brown versus Board of Education decision, a decision of moving in the direction of redemption, and that kicking off a Southern movement that now is a Southernification of the United States government, to call it a backlash, I think, gives it too much credit. It's a malignant force. And that malignant force is in a position now to have its firm majority, and in significant part because they blocked a nomination of the very first black president of this country. I think you can understand this stuff. There's other ways to understand it. There are other important things to recognize, but we can understand its gravity looking first and even most importantly through a racial lens. Not the only lens, but it's an important lens. Anything I missed that you want to make sure people hear before I move on to the next caller?
No, just that vote in November.
All right, Sonia, thank you. We've got Omar calling from Herndon, Virginia.
Yes, sir. I think the Democrats need to hold the line, and they did it before with Borkish, and they need to really hold the line. I mean, gloves off, no niceness, no nothing, no gloves off. Hold the line, block it. They need to die on that hill, stopping this nomination. Can that happen?
Thank you, Omar, very much. Did you ask the question, can it happen, or were you?
Yes, I want your opinion. I want your opinion on that. I mean, that's what I want. I would like to see, but I'm asking you.
It's interesting. It's interesting. When I get asked a question like, can it happen, I'm reminded of the Heisenberg principle. The Heisenberg principle essentially is the measurement of a thing can impact the thing. And trying to evaluate the speed of a tiny object, anything you can do to measure the speed of that tiny object actually impacts its speed. So when I'm asked, well, can this happen? If I were to say, Well, I think the odds are low. I worry that I'm putting a finger on the scale of making it a little less likely. I do think it's very, very hard. What it takes to confirm and appoint a Supreme Court justice as a president and a majority in the U.S. Senate. The Republicans have those things. So it's hard to block. I guess I could put it this way. I would not consider it a failure of Democratic big D elected officials if they were unable to block this appointment. They don't have the presidency. They don't have the Senate. I do think that it is worth very strong effort that both tries to make clear, as Anisha Singh was saying, tries to make clear that when Joe Manchin and in West Virginia, when Indiana Senator Donnelly are making their decision on this, they are making a decision about health care. They're making a decision about the Affordable Care Act. They're making a decision about whether the health benefits of middle class and poor people across the country are going to be stripped from them, including in their own states and districts. I think it's also really important for the country to make very clear to Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, when they are making a decision on this next justice, however well-dressed, however well-spoken, however in sheep's clothing they might be, they are making a decision about women's reproductive rights. Even if the first three decisions aren't an outright overturning of Roe, and my own guess would be they might not be, probably would not be, but there will be 1,000 cuts that will be continuing oppression of women over time. And that one of the reasons this matters to me so much is that for my own sins, from the sins of the country that I love, the only way we can not justify but attempt to overcome those sins is to be better in the future. That's the only thing we can do. And that Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, I'm sorry that the burden is upon them, but they have, I think, shared responsibility in figuring out how we can be a more virtuous nation, how we can be a less oppressive nation. So I guess my quick answer is, I think we should do what you're saying. I think we should, I'd say hold the line, but advocate strongly, and everybody should try. And I will say that it will be hard, and that's why we have to maintain energy to do that for a generation as well as for a month.
Yep, excellent. Thank you so much for taking my call. Thank you.
Thank you. Robert from Southern California. What town in Southern California?
I'm in Orange County, Mission Viejo.
All right. Orange County. Interesting, by the way. You know this better than I do, but Orange County, for a long, was Reagan country, was the most Republican county in the country. And thanks to people like you, I assume it's changing. Will you hold on for a minute? We're going to come back from break. I want to hear your thoughts on the Republican Party.
Would love to.
We'll be back in just a second. This is Tom Hartman's show. I'm Jeff.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is the Tom Hartman Show. The call-in line is 202-808-9925. Robert from Southern California, speak your piece.
Yeah, you know, we talk about nominations, about every last thing. If the Democrats don't hold the line, they're going to be seen as complete failures and feckless and all of that. But 99% of the Democrats are going to do the right thing, and 100% of the Republicans plus the 1% of Democrats will be the ones who did it. The difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party isn't what Joe Manchin does. It's what the majority of the Democrats do. And I think at this point, we should stop playing games and just realize that the Republicans are reliable enemies. We have some unreliable friends. If you're in a fight, you take out your reliable enemies, and then you have a conversation with your unreliable friends. We need to get rid of the Republican Party right down to dog catcher.
So whether it is possible to end the political party, your a point I hear you making, I'm picking up what you're putting down, which is that we spend 80% of our, we don't spend 80% of our energy fighting against the people who we disagree with 20% of the time, and that we use our energy to identify. I agree with your implication that if this Supreme Court justice is confirmed, this is not a failure of Barack Obama. This is not a failure of Nancy Pelosi. This is not a failure of Chuck Schumer. This is not a failure of Senator Booker. This is a success or failure of the team that is in charge, and that we have to work to build a movement that, if we want a different world, works for that world. Is that about right?
Yeah, the thing about it is, you know, the idea is punctuated equilibrium.
All right, you got to define it. That sounds awesome. I want to say it lots of times, so you got to explain it.
Okay, punctuated equilibrium is what happens. Well, it's essentially why you and I are having this conversation. Because had the dinosaurs not been wiped out, human beings would never have evolved. There was no niche for a human being to live in a dinosaur world. We've been known in past tense as delicious. That's it. The bugs that
you seem delicious, Robert.
Huh?
You seem delicious to me.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're hearing it. So here's the deal. If you want real change, and I'm voting for, we have the luxury here in California of voting for progressive Democrats in districts, because there's not going to be a Republican that wins. We're going to take Mimi Walters out this time, and we're going to replace her with a very progressive woman Democrat.
Yeah.
Okay? That's going to happen because we're sick of Mimi Walters, and we are waging it on her.
Fair point. But meanwhile, you have the same number of senators. You have the same number of senators as Alaska, Wyoming, Montana, and Rhode Island.
You know, I'm not that worried about some of these other places. What I'm worried about is we get it, and we get working, and we get momentum, and we take the Republican Party and break it. That only requires about a 3% shift. Getting a third party in without that, without taking the Republicans out, requires a huge shift.
Robert, thank you.
Republicans are gone. We've got room.
Thank you for your call. Jim, Free Speech TV, you got a few seconds. Small government versus big government. Oh, you don't have a few seconds. We're going to break. I respect you as a person, Jim, and we're going to be back with you and others in just a second. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. We've been taking your calls. We've been talking about the war on democracy, and I am not overstating. We have been talking about the government of greed, and I am not misstating. We have been talking about a Supreme Court justice that is being stolen and a court packed, and I am not misstating. And we are talking about the blockage by this administration of mother's milk, and I wish I were overstating or misstating or offering something akin to an Onion article, but I'm not. And we're also taking your calls, and we will again. Right now, though, we need to talk to Bob Ney, our friend at Talk Media News, talkmedianews.com. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good, Jefferson. How are you?
I am well. So has the field been narrowed? When I woke up this morning and when I went to bed last night, it looked like four. I saw a headline come across the transom of my eyelids that said that maybe it may have been narrowed even down to two. Do you know anything about that?
Well, yes. I think, at least in what I'm looking at, it is down to Kavanaugh or Amy Barrett. That's what I believe it's down to, those two. Now, Jefferson, something strange about Kavanaugh, and now he was, you know, a Bush appointee, which is not strange, but he was a Bush appointee and clerk for the for Justice of the Supreme Court, etc. But here is a statement in May of 2006. Kavanaugh stated that, quote, he would follow Roe v. Wade faithfully and fully, end of quote. And then another quote, abortion has already been decided by the Supreme Court. And he stated that a right to the abortion has been found, quote, many times, citing Planned Parenthood. He also had a lower court ruling that led to quotes and information Justice Roberts used to support the American Health Care Act, Obamacare. Now, having said this, this is not all over the mainstream media, but there are smithereens of ultra, ultra, ultra right people who are saying he's a bad choice, et cetera, et cetera. So if you read, though, between the lines here, as a lower district court judge, he was saying this is how the Supreme Court spoke. I don't think that means by any stretch of imagination that is how he will react necessarily as a justice. But people are seizing on that. Also, I want to throw a Machiavellian theory out there, if I could, for a second. Possibly they're saying, oh, the right of the right doesn't like him. He must be okay then for some of the D side for confirmation. I just wanted to throw out a kind of weird.
No, I don't. I don't think it's that weird. I mean, I think if you were Donald Trump, I imagine you'd have three objectives, three things that would be top of mind. One would be keeping the bricks together in the red wall, making sure that, roughly speaking, the conservative apparatus viewed your pick as laudable among their, you know, favorable choices. Second, you'd want to see to it that that person was confirmable, that Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski would vote for that person. And by the way, if that person has a statement there saying, I think it is settled law, that is precisely the line that Susan Collins is looking for. If that line were handed to her in private or public and said, here you go, she's a yes. And then third, I think maybe more than a tiebreaker for Donald Trump is a Supreme Court justice who is less likely to hold him to account. Someone who believes in a strong executive. Kavanaugh was involved in and I'm pretty sure I'm getting this right. The Kavanaugh was involved in the Clinton investigation and afterwards questioned that role. I have that correct, right?
Yes. Yes, sir. And with Ken Starr.
And that afterwards he is posited that maybe they went too far or if not, I guess, criticizing that investigation, he has questioned the role that courts should play and that investigation should play in limiting presidential power and hypothesize that potentially investigations like that should wait till after the person's president. So if Donald Trump can get somebody that conservatives like, that Susan Collins can vote yes on, and that would say that he shouldn't be investigated while he's in office, well, that's a yes. That seems like an obvious one, and that doesn't mean I know what's going to happen, but it's a pretty strong argument. I'll also say that the New Orleans Advocate has a report published this morning that Amy Coney Barrett is not one of the two finalists. I don't know that the New Orleans Advocate knows that, but they at least were willing to report it. But I think Kavanaugh is a good pick. Anything we're missing, anything that's been part of the analysis that you think we're underappreciating or something that hasn't been part of the analysis at all that should be?
Well, no, the only thing is with the other potential choice, Hardiman.
Tom Hardiman, not to be confused with Tom Hartman.
Yes, that's not Hartman.
Yeah.
Although he would make a good justice of the Supreme
Court. I don't think he went to law school, but going to law school is not a requirement.
He would still be a good justice.
Tom Hartman is eligible. Go ahead.
Sir. But Hardiman is supported by Rick Santorum, and they're saying, hey, this is your blue-collar base. You need to get him. But Don McGahn, the president's White House lawyer, and Hannity, his golfing buddy, like Kavanaugh. So, you know, Amy Barrett may be out. I still think she might be in contention because the conservatives love her. That is their choice, is Amy Barrett, not the other two.
Well, Bob Ney, appreciate your time very much.
Thank you.
How hard do you think the confirmation is going to be? If it's Kavanaugh, do you think it's a pretty quick vote, or do you think we were talking to Anisha Singh from Center America Progress, who thinks there's a real chance because the ACA is on the line and because Roe versus Wade is on the line, if the Federal Society has vetted these people, that means those things are on the line.
I don't think this is quick and easy.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think it's going to be now. If Collins, though, goes, the Democratic Senator Manchin is a problem because if he goes with the R's and she goes with the D's, then it is still by one
still the
vote.
Same thing. Yeah,
they made it,
and that's the challenge. If the whole vote is about Roe versus Wade,
correct,
that puts Joe Manchin in a tough spot because one of the ways if you ask him, he would say one of the ways he was elected as a Democrat in West Virginia in the modern world is because he is anti-abortion, but she makes the point. It's also about health care. It's also about the ACA. It's also about the attack on democracy. And people in West Virginia, they get sick, they want health care, and they value democracy too.
Right.
Thank you very much, Bob Ney, Talk Media News.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff. We're going to be back after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.